This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this politics edition of the program, counting mail-in ballots delays the outcome of the 2020 presidential race. And the anticipated blue wave fails to materialize in congressional races for both the House of Representatives and the Senate. Hello again. I'm Carol Castiel. Well, our valued political analysts Jim Kessler and John Fortier had thought we might have clear results on election night, November 3rd, but that did not happen. The unprecedented number of mail-in ballots across the country has delayed results for not only the presidency, but also several key Senate races, which could determine the balance of power in the Senate, which is currently controlled by Republicans. In the House of Representatives, Democrats are likely to hold their majority, but contrary to analysts' predictions, they actually lost rather than gained seats. As we've said many times on this broadcast, in the United States, it is the Electoral College, not the national popular vote, which determines the winner of the presidential contest. Going into Saturday and Sunday, Democratic candidate former Vice President Joe Biden was leading the electoral count, with key races in Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, and North Carolina still undecided. The state of Arizona was called by the Associated Press and Fox News as a win for Democrat Joe Biden. According to my VOA newsroom colleague, Ken Bredemeyer, if Mr. Biden can hold his vote lead in Arizona with its 11 electors and Nevada with 6, he could reach the 270 Electoral College majority and become the country's 46th president at his inauguration in January, no matter the outcome in Georgia and Pennsylvania. This illustrates that Joe Biden has an Electoral College advantage and many more pathways to the 270 Electoral College votes needed to win than does U.S. President Donald Trump. Mr. Biden currently leads the national popular vote by more than 4 million. For his part, President Donald Trump, who is trailing as the mail-in ballots are being methodically counted by impartial election officials in the contested states, has been making what many analysts say are unfounded accusations against Democrats by asserting that they are, quote, trying to steal the election with mail-in ballots, close quote. However, in the state of Georgia, where Mr. Biden has overtaken President Trump, there is a Republican governor and state legislature. Many analysts and lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are praising the state's conduct of the elections. Each state administers its elections, often with varying rules that govern early voting and the use of mail-in ballots. Each state, whether controlled by Democrats or Republicans, prides itself on the professional conduct of their election officials. On Wednesday evening, President Trump falsely claimed victory and asserted that there has been widespread fraud related to mail-in ballots, even though no evidence exists to support that allegation. Republicans have been filing lawsuits alleging vote tabulation irregularities, some of which have already been tossed out. For his part, former Vice President Joe Biden is urging Americans to have patience and remain calm and wait for every vote to be counted. For more on the 2020 election and ramifications for the U.S. political landscape, we turn to our regular analysts. John Fortier, with his finger on the pulse of Republicans, is director of governmental studies at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and that's a prominent think tank here in Washington. And Jim Kessler, he's former aide to Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. He's currently executive vice president for policy at Third Way. That's a centrist policy group based here in Washington. And both gentlemen join me, as usual, via Microsoft Teams. Gentlemen, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
Great to be here.
Yes, indeed. Well, John, let me begin with you. Of course, I'm not trying to embarrass either of you. We all thought maybe we would know the results on election night, but it didn't quite materialize. What's your take on what we know as of now? Give us your assessment.
Well, I think a couple of big points about the election. I think in many ways, the pollsters and projectors were wrong about the size of a Democratic wave or a Biden win. There were many indications, both at the national level and in many state polls, that this would not be as tight a contest as it seems to be. So Republicans had a very good night in all sorts of ways, winning some states and holding on to places that people thought would not go. Florida, places like Ohio and Iowa, where the Republicans did extremely well, where they were thought to not do so well. I think especially significant, they've done very well in the Senate and the House. The House will still be Democratic, but a lot closer. And the Senate, you know, I think the most likely scenario is that Republicans will hold the Senate, maybe with 52 seats. That will depend on a couple of runoffs in Georgia, likely, but I think they're probably more likely to go Republicans' way. So a very good night for Republicans in all sorts of ways. A good night for Donald Trump, too, in part. Certainly, his coalition came out in many ways in bigger margins than people expected. I do think that Donald Trump overperformed expectations, but is sitting now in a position where he has fewer paths to the nomination than does Joe Biden. He's still likely to lose the national popular vote by a significantly larger margin than he did in 2016. Lots of votes will be coming in over the next week or two from places like California and New York, which I think will boost his lead to 4.5% of the popular vote, something like that. But again, today he sits with the possibility of winning very narrowly, and that is prevailing in Georgia, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania. And even if he did that, partly because of a quirk in the Electoral College where Joe Biden has likely won one elector out in Nebraska, he's still one elector short, and so he would have to win again in Arizona or Nevada. It does mean basically that Donald Trump, all of those states are going to have to go his way, or at least they're going to have to end up being so close that we're going to recount. I think the danger is, especially a state like Pennsylvania, that the movement and the number of votes out there is towards the Democrats. And a small margin for Joe Biden in Pennsylvania means we're recounting. But a larger margin means that Donald Trump's path to the presidency has cut off. So again, a very good night for Donald Trump and Republicans. But at this point, it looks like his paths are not so great and may fall short by just a little bit in the Electoral College.
Over to you, Jim Kessler. A good night for President Trump and the Republicans. On the other hand, as John Fortier just said, President Trump is falling short, and particularly he has many fewer pathways to win the Electoral College than does Joe Biden, the Democrat.
I don't think it was a very good night for Donald Trump, and he certainly has not acted since the polling has closed on Tuesday that it's been a good night for him and a good week for him. As of this moment, the presidential election has not been officially called, but Joe Biden is going to win the national vote by well over 5 million votes and by somewhere between 4% and 5%. We don't elect presidents by the national vote. We elect them by the Electoral College, which means what happens in the states. Joe Biden, either in states that have already been called or in states that are on the verge of being called, will easily pass the 270 Electoral College votes necessary to become president. So in that sense, this was a great night for Democrats. It was a great night for Joe Biden. It was a terrible night for Donald Trump. When you get down ballot, it was a disappointment for Democrats. They expected to expand their majority in the House. They will not. That majority in the House will shrink by somewhere between 7 and 10 members. They expected to at least pull even in the Senate to get to 50-50, where with a Democratic president, Joe Biden, the vice president would be the deciding vote. That is possible, but I agree with John. It is only in the realm of possibility. It's not in the realm of likelihood. And I think what we saw out there, a couple of things, John was right. The pollsters got it wrong again. They missed on this, and that has become a recurring theme in American politics. And second is, there were enough voters out there who said, I trust Joe Biden, but I'm not really sure I trust Joe Biden with a Democratic majority in both houses of Congress. I'm worried that elements of the Democratic Party have gone too far left, and they split their tickets in some places. And Joe Biden is going to win by several million votes more than congressional candidates. So his coattails didn't really exist.
All right, gentlemen, that's a very interesting assessment on the overall outcome as we know it. So back to you, John Fortier. As you said, the Republicans did very well, notwithstanding they did not win the House of Representatives, but they gained many more seats. They are probably going to hold in the Senate. But let's take a look at what do you think the factors were that drove these elections? And in addition to that, I wanted to get your take on, you know, the mail-in ballots, because President Trump and the Republicans have been disparaging mail-in ballots for quite a while. And now that is coming out as one of their arguments for questioning the validity and the integrity of the elections. What's your comment with regard to that skepticism?
First on the factors, I think there's a lot to be said about demographic shifts, and we can talk about this. I think we're going to analyze this, especially as we go forward and have more data. But, you know, I think two big factors out there are the coronavirus and Joe Biden. That if you looked at where Donald Trump was in January, February, he arguably would have been in a better place. Many people are saying in some ways it's surprising that Donald Trump didn't do worse because of the coronavirus, a cataclysmic event that affects the economy and people's lives all over the world. But I got to think that he was sitting there in a better position with a better economy without this in January, February. You know, small marginal changes probably help him. Joe Biden, second point, a better nominee for Democrats than their other alternatives. You know, more moderate, older, and had a slightly different coalition. You know, most Democrats were going to vote for any Democratic nominee. But if you think of Joe Biden being able to, not just because he was born in Pennsylvania, but just to have some more resonance, especially across the Midwest, where the margins that it looks like he's going to win key states in the Midwest are, I think they're going to be clear, but they're going to be small. And so a couple of percentage points change in the other direction across the way. And Donald Trump is president and Republicans do even better in the election. So I think those are the two biggest factors that we could think about just in a macro way that things could have gone differently. But for that. On the voting by mail, look, we did do just an incredible change in our election to go from already a pretty substantial amount of voting by mail, maybe 23% or so of Americans, to nearly doubling that. And, you know, that's caused some controversy. I guess my view is I think there are some legitimate issues about whether we should vote by mail, and some of those may be different during the pandemic and other times. We can argue about that. And around the edges, I think there are some legitimate litigation going on as to what we should do about certain classes of ballots. But the big picture of ballots that were cast through the mail, through other ways that are being counted now, most of them are being counted in a pretty traditional way. They're ballots that have already arrived, that have come through, that are non-controversial. And so talk about stopping the counting or those ballots are really illegitimate. You know, I think the battles to whether we should have voted that way had been lost earlier. And they're legitimate ballots that are likely to be counted. If we do end up in a really close, tight situation, which I'm not sure we're going to, I agree with Jim about Pennsylvania is likely to move, I think, more significantly to Joe Biden. You know, then I think all of these smaller issues, which reflect the differences between the parties and what we should do about different types of ballots that have come in and where we're going to be in court, those are all live issues. But the big issue of the counting of the basic votes that came in, whether they came in by mail or in person, that is still going on is the counting of ballots that no court is going to step in and stop, and that we're going to see the results of that before we would get to any recounts or real challenges.
Jim Kessler, please hold your thoughts. I'm going to take a quick break and go right to you with the same question. You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, from whom you just heard. He's Director of Governmental Studies at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, co-founder and Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way. And they join me via Microsoft Teams. We are discussing the conduct and outcome of the 2020 presidential and congressional races. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to a loyal fan and Twitter follower, Feroz Khan from the Jammu and Kashmir region. As always, if you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. And next week on Encounter, we talk with two analysts about how a Biden presidency would likely affect U.S. foreign policy. And on Press Conference USA, we feature political analyst Elaine Kmark, who will offer more analysis on the outcome of the presidential and congressional races. That's next week on Encounter and Press Conference USA. Well, back to our program, and let me go to Jim Kessler to answer the same question I posed to John Fortier. What do you think motivated people to vote for either Joe Biden or the president? Most people say it was a referendum on President Trump. And of course, John Fortier was saying Joe Biden was probably a better candidate for the Democrats. And yet, it seems that Mr. Trump was relatively successful with constant assertions that, well, if you vote for Joe, he's going to shut down America or have socialist policies, which couldn't be further from the truth if you look at Joe Biden. But somehow these types of narratives did seem to resonate. And then secondly, your view of how the mail-in went and Mr. Trump's assertions that there's a lot of fraud without evidence and asking for vote counting to be stopped, you know, if he's winning and to continue when it appears that he's losing in a particular state. There's a bit of a contradiction there.
Well, consistency has never really been Donald Trump's strong suit. Let me start with your second half of the question first. This vote went off remarkably well, and the people in the states and cities and counties of America deserve a lot of credit, dealing with a lot of variables and a lot of changes and a pandemic, and they pulled it off, and congratulations to them. They are all small heroes in this country. It is also a shame that Donald Trump is denigrating the mail-in ballots and the counting of the votes. And my hope is that this is the final stain, the final piece of damage, the final bit of destruction that he is able to reap over this country. It's a shame. He's wrong on this. And I'm glad that some Republican leaders have stood up and have told him to stand down on this. On the election and Joe Biden, John Fortier is right. Joe Biden was the right candidate to take on Donald Trump. I'm not sure anybody else in that large field would have been able to win this race. That is not to say that Donald Trump is popular. He's not popular. He's never been a popular president, even when the economy was good. He's never been a popular president. But the Democrats are a party that has been divided for the last several years. And those vocal wing of the party, but it's a minority wing of the party, that is pretty far left. And, you know, through social media and through other efforts, they are the loudest voice within the Democratic Party. Joe Biden, because he's been around for so long, is able to be a counterweight to that and to say, look, I beat the socialist. I mean, that was a line that he said over and over again about him beating Bernie Sanders. He wasn't saying that to brag. He was saying that because they obviously saw in all their polling and their research that enough voters were afraid that Democrats were going to take this country too far left on the economy and on other issues, you know, maybe having to do with police or on some environmental issues. And Biden was the person who could counter that. And then you saw throughout this race, Donald Trump really had a difficult time in trying to define who Joe Biden was. Was he too old? Was he too enfeebled? Hunter Biden, was he too beholden to the left? He never really knew how to take on Joe Biden. And in the end, it looks like Joe Biden will beat him.
Back to you, John Fortier. Quickly, on the question of litigation, some election attorneys assert that a litigation strategy, which seems to be the one that President Trump is pursuing, doesn't usually flip the outcome of the election. Where do you come down on that?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that there are some legitimate issues that they are pursuing in court. They may not win on all those issues, but they're the type of issues that are pretty specific. Even, you know, some of the bigger questions, we have one in Pennsylvania about the deadline for ballots coming in, some of the ballots coming in afterwards, partly because we voted so many early. I think that pile is not so large, but, you know, it's about a specific set of ballots. Should Republicans have access to the counting? Generally, I say yes, but the court has decided in a certain way how that will happen. A legitimate point to bring up, but it's not going to affect the counting of the big ballots. And I think the answer is we do think that, especially Pennsylvania, some of the outstanding ballots, the regularly cast ballots, probably are going to be counted and the margin's going to be pretty big. But if it's not, if we end up in Georgia, which is very close now, in Pennsylvania, we end up close in Arizona, where we're talking about a few thousand votes, probably lower thousands rather than higher, then there'll be all sorts of litigation. There'll be recounts. We'll be fighting over everything. If it's bigger than that, the idea that perhaps a recount could be called is true, but that's unlikely to change the outcome. So I guess I think the litigation is not going to stop the big counting of the kind of more regular vote that is still going on in some places. It might affect some of the little issues that become relevant if we are much closer after that big counting gets near the end.
Jim Kessler, do you think that the margin of victory that you believe Joe Biden will win by will be large enough to mitigate or pretty much undermine any litigation strategy that President Trump is trying to pursue to try to flip the outcome of the election?
Yeah, this election, when all the votes are counted, this election, except maybe in one or two states, the outcome will be clearly known. No amount of legal wrangling will change that. And those one or two states, and Georgia is prime among them, is not the state that would determine who would win the presidency. when it's ultimately said and done, the people who are looking at what are the remaining ballots out there in Pennsylvania, like, they believe that Joe Biden's going to win by 100,000 votes in Pennsylvania. Like, he's going to win by several percentage points. When there are court challenges, votes swing by several hundred, not by several thousand, and certainly not several tens of thousands there. One of the things that will be interesting is what are Republican legislators, the leaders like Senator Mitch McConnell, who's the Republican majority leader in the Senate, and other leaders of the Republican Party, what will they be saying and doing when it is beyond a shadow of a doubt that Joe Biden is the next president and that all these legal challenges are really, for the most part, baseless and designed only to sow doubt on our democracy and prolong what we all know is the outcome, and that's that Joe Biden is president. And will they start to tear themselves away from Trump? Hope the answer is yes, but we'll have to see.
As we close, John Fortier, what would you say to Jim Kessler, who is wondering what some of the stalwart Republicans would do should President Trump continue to sow doubt and even potentially incite some violence or chaos? How do you think the Republicans, the senators and members of Congress, will handle this vis-a-vis Mr. Trump?
Well, look, I'll just say again, I think the rhetoric of what's being said about sort of stopping the count or the big picture votes being somehow out of order is not right. The litigation is really much more narrowly focused. So there's a mismatch of those two things. And I think that'll, you know, likely become clear as the more regular vote comes in. I do think just one more important thing that we really haven't talked about on the positive side for Republicans, I think the great likelihood is that Joe Biden will come out of this as the president, but he's likely to be the president without a Senate and with a very narrow House. And I think that's a very tough position for Democrats to be in. They're going to not have certainly the robust legislative agenda we were hearing about, or the one that could have happened with a much bigger Senate majority, packing the court, adding states, climate change, major changes in healthcare. Not that there couldn't be some negotiation between the parties on some of these issues, but it's, in some ways, it's all off the table, and likely, you know, a midterm looming in a couple of years where there generally is good news for the out party. So it isn't a good night for Donald Trump in the sense that he's likely to lose the election. But for the party and for his supporters and others who have come out for the Republicans, they are much happier about what happened in this election. And it is going to directly affect both the governing of the next 2 years and really perhaps the control of the bodies in 2 years from now.
John Fortier, I can't thank you enough for bringing that point out. And I'm going to conclude with Jim Kessler for a response, a very interesting point. How do you think a President Biden would deal with that? Will his calls for bipartisanship, his relationships with senators on both sides of the aisle, will that somehow offset those obstacles?
Assuming Joe Biden is the next president, he will be the first Democrat to take office without controlling both houses of Congress since Grover Cleveland in the 19th century. Okay, so this is very unusual. President coming in and not having control of Congress. It's certainly unusual for a Democrat. Yes, it means that the ambition has to be scaled back. I will say this. Joe Biden also enters the presidency with a greater knowledge of the Senate and of Congress than any president since Lyndon Johnson in the 1960s, and also with deeper relationships with people from both parties of any president, also since Lyndon Johnson. So if anyone is going to be able to work with this situation and come out with progress and to be able to break the gridlock and to pass legislation, Joe Biden is the right person to be doing this. But a lot of this will also depend on Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, who is a Republican, who in the past, and the Republican strategy in the past when Democrats have taken office, has really been to stonewall everything. And I just think they're going to have to decide whether that's what they want to do or not. And if they don't want to stonewall everything, then there's room for negotiations there. And if they do, well, we're just going to have to replay this again in the next election.
All right, gentlemen, this conversation will be continued, but I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, Director of Governmental Studies at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, once again, thanks for a terrific conversation and analysis, and we'll check in with you again as soon as the results are more officially clarified. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.